future is now.
Future is Now is a podcast series exploring intersections between art and social change. Produced by Zed Galleries, Sharzad Arshadi, and Caroline Künzli. The title comes from a song by German punk rock singer Nina Hagen. She sings, 1968 is over, it's over. Future is now. It's really going to be a better world. Her lyrics express our feeling that change for a better world is happening right now through the work of many. In each episode, Future is Now will tell you these stories of change, stories of artists and art projects that inspire us. As you listen, we hope these stories will inspire you too.
Future is now.
Tensei, hello, good day, bonjour, Rosh Bash, Sabah al Khair. Ruz Becher to you all in the many more beautiful languages out there. Welcome to Future is Now. Today, for our first ever podcast episode, I'm your host, Shahrzad Arshadi. In this episode, I invite you to listen to the first part of my conversation with Khadija Becher, a brilliant, kind, and generous Montreal artist, and a wonderful woman that I'm lucky to call my friend. Khadija Becher is a multidisciplinary artist originally from Rojava, Kurdistan, Syria, who immigrated to Canada in 2001. Her multidisciplinary installations often involve participative storytelling to create active spaces for greater understanding. As a witness to traumatic events, unsettled feeling of home are part of her experience. Khadija's work investigates social and political themes centered on the uncertainty of home as it relates to persecution, identity, displacement, and memory.
Marini, I'd like you to tell me about your process. What is, I know this is what you created this amazing dress. Tell me about that process. Why did you wanted to create that piece? And why was it important to work with plants? And yeah, I like to start with your latest work.
It's very significant work for me as well, I would say, because working with names, it's something I have been working for a long time, like since I started my project, so I would say. So I have been working in different ways. Some of them were in video, but some were like really in a different way. But the idea of having this project, like when we were kids, we I was born in northern Syria in a Kurdish city. And there we did not have the right to choose our Kurdish names. Actually, our family did not have this right because when people choose Kurdish name, it's always meaningful. It has a meaning. All names has meanings, has stories to tell, has something very powerful in it. It carries a lot of things, more than just a language. And our intellectual rights were taken from us. So the name were banned most of the time, like we did not have the right to choose the names. And many of names come either from religion or were borrowed from Arabic. Sometimes it's just translation, sometimes it's not. So many people has two names, a name at home and a name that is written or at school. So basically, like thinking about this, like the forbidden language, and you know, we have like very big restriction around language and intellectual rights, and because of that we are not allowed to learn our language. And if we tried once, it was political activity, so the teacher was put in prison a few days, and I know there was a big threatening thing. So we were kids, so we were sent home, but the teacher got the consequence. there was a big restriction around the language. But later on, when I started to realize that was not the only thing, like even stores, they have names that were covered. I remember one time, like there was a big time where all the names of all stores were projected and were visited in a way to see if they were Kurdish or Arabic or like other, like if it was Christian name or other name, they were not really covered. So I remember all this store with big white thing covering the old name, and they asked the owners to change it. Beside that, there were also changing of demography, the map. So there, it was, there was this green belt, they call it. It was changing demography and changing history and memory of the area. So a lot of villages were just changing from Kurdish to Arabic, or sometimes just erase the name and have a new name. So this process has been going on for a while, since 60s. And from there, I thought how much meaning the name carries, not only meaningful for a family or parents who choose carefully the names of their children, but it also relates to history, memory, and marking the territory and land. So I thought, like, all these people who were displaced recently, what it will be their relation to this land. So it was not only there. I think also about here, about Aboriginal people, how their land was taken and how the name of places are different now. I don't know what is their relation to the land, but I have feeling that we have similar issue, I would say. And yeah, this is like things I really want to work with in the future. But thinking about even myself with the relation to my family, to back home and here, how do I connect to this land? I always feel injustice happened here, and it reminds me of the injustice happened there back home. So I was thinking the name are very important to start with. Like when you walk around Montreal, you see names of street given from mainly white people. So where are the people who were here before? So why their names are not around the streets? And this is something really, like, I think about it a lot. And so I thought about the new people who came here. So many people, they don't know a lot about Aboriginal people. And I always try to, I think as marginalized, we relate more to the native people than the white culture or things. So I feel like more connected to that. And I start to learn more. The more I learn, the more I got attached to. And it's part of like the injustice that is happening. And to think about that, and to think about how as like when we arrive here, it's a new place, everything is new, but somebody suddenly come and project an image on you, an image that was portrayed or presented by either media or film, or in a very bad way, like most of the time, because you are framed and connected immediately to violence or to a body that has like it's very strange feeling to be framed anyway. Like if somebody tells me, oh, you, my name is immediately seen as religious Kurdish, could be from North America because it has more, people are more familiar with there. And when I say I'm from Syria, and when I say Kurdish, most people, they don't know about that stories, but they immediately draw an image for me, the Muslim, the Syrian who fled from. I got refugee here before the Syrian war because the Kurdish struggle was even much, much farther than this. And our struggle started. So I was here even before that. And in terms of religion, it's very personal. So I never practice religion. I don't get into religion. Like, I am not going along with it, but I don't have a rejection for it because I respect what my family carry in terms of beliefs and practice. So I have a peace in this side. I know what I am, but it's frustrating when somebody immediately frame this and immediately like it comes as if like a Muslim person is one simple thing person. And most of the time, because we know extremists, they have a lot of violence and in their like it's political Islam, I would say. So immediately the religion come into this issue because we know the only thing we hear in media, we don't hear about Khadija the artist. We hear more about the person who bombed himself in a certain place, who killed this many civilians. We hear this. Or if we see, we learn about Syria, we know Syria now through war. We know that Syria has the images come from there. Either people like fleeing, trying to get access, like as invader, like this crossing thing, or have these people like the body, like the dead bodies. Or so there is always extreme image. And these are like very, you know, it's not like it doesn't represent. So I thought representation was like a big issue here. And it's very wrong to minimalize this, but it's easier for people to just sum up from what they know in general and to connect. So I thought if I start with names and with personal stories, it will give a significant meaning to just have another look to these people and these displaced people. They are people have life, have people who love them. They didn't choose to flee, but even if they choose to, like, they look for a safe life, to a place that is really like offering more peace. They want to have a family with access to all these things they were deprived from. So starting from here, I thought through the names, it will be I think the meaning of names or the meaning that each person carry with them, it will be a good way to share the memory of these people, a precious one, the people we loved, or a people not like, it could be any person that made something important in your mind. It could be like a person you don't love or a person you love. It could be a person, ordinary person, you know. But the idea is like to carry this name and give it to a plant. And when the plant grow, you don't know what is the plant giving you. Is it going to survive or not? Everybody loves plant. Everybody would love to have this green thing. And when you take it, that you are willing to care for it. And when I give it a name, and if you hear the story, then you are carrying for like when you give a name, Ziba, to a plant and somebody will take it, they are taking care of Ziba. And if they forgot the name, but they will still carry the story. But if they don't remember the story and the name, but they are still caring for the plant and they give into it already, like even if it doesn't survive, even if it doesn't give flower or fruit or things, it's there is something happened already, like you cannot deny it or escape from it. And caring for a stranger, you don't know, but you are willing to learn or care or just simply share your memory with. And this is how like we create kind of, maybe it's promoting love each other more, promoting more through the plants. They are, you know, nature bring us a lot of meaningful things. And through this isolation, I think a lot of people start to notice it more, to leave it more. A lot of people I know, they start to plant people who never touch plants, but they start to do that. And on a personal side, I would say, like, we have been in a small cubic place in apartment, but when we moved, like with my kids, I really moved specially to have a garden, so to touch the land. It was a big need, because we had small pots at the apartment, but like when I saw flowers or like very little seed my kids put in a pot and they flourish and they boom, they made a significant things. Like I felt like they gave us, they just moved our spirit. They gave it energy. They pushed us in a very positive way. Even the kids, like, it was a big surprise, like how life is powerful and very simple seed has this much energy. So like on personal level, I wanted my kids to get engaged and also like, to experience how care can give and do, like what you expect at the end, it can be a gift. You might get this gift back or not, but you gifted already, like your care. And on the other side, it was like, it's always a struggle to connect to this place. But like, I think I thought the kids were like kind of created this balance connection to this place. I don't know, there is magic happen there after the kids come, like this desire to move or to go or to, I don't know, maybe the moon was the, I don't know, we never felt subtle, this feeling of uncertainty about the place. But when they came, there was this feeling that kind of settled down and this connection to people happened. But there was something missing. And I think it was this, it was the land and the planting and the thing. So by planting, I feel it brought very significant change to our life. The planting itself it wasn't about just simply planting. When you put the seed in the ground and it flourished, then it's not like what happened back home when my mother used to plant a lot of flowers and her garden was full of flower and trees with very little space, but she was having all big garden, almost every single flower, every single like tree. We have a lot of trees, fruit trees. So
woven stories, lives entangled. With open hands we unravel the fray. Untangle dreams, loosen the seams between what is seen and what may never, ever be. Witness memories unearthed, can past deeds feed the dirt.
And when I start to plant it, I start to learn about the place. I start to notice things that you don't notice. What kind of insect harm, what kind of insect like corporate to make this plant thrive, to make it fruit. So also paying attention to weeds, and like my neighbor always insisted, like, why you don't remove these weeds? And he would follow me. And first weed I started to remove, it was violet. It was a flower. It was like full of, especially on his side. So I thought maybe it will bother him. It didn't bother me, but I don't know. I wanted to make a good relation with him. So I really removed a lot from his side, close to his side, but I left like maybe one or two, like just as, you know, just appreciate some at least. But other weeds as well, no, remove this. It was abandoned, kind of abandoned garden, like it was full of weeds. Then I started to know, but they look beautiful, some look so, he said, no, they are really bad. So I started to learn what, which one is good, which one is bad. I thought this way I start to learn about here, what it is living here. And most of them, they are native plants. Some of them were just coming with the, they came from the other places with the settlers. So these things, the plant, it took me much farther than just seeing plant growing or seeing it connect me to the land to, and brought up this issue of territory as well. So what marks the territory? What makes us like, what makes my neighbor not like this, unfamiliar for him or unwanted? Why the grass is better than this? Who said the grass is more beautiful than clover or whatever plant? Who said so? What, where did this idea come from? We used to, we never like remove bad things, except like when it's agriculture, then you want to take the maximum from the land. But when it's garden, home garden, why would we like privilege one thing from another, this flat green surface over this wild, diverse, beautiful, generous, I would say, beautiful things. So, yeah, like, oh my God, I feel like it's like in the core of the project still, I didn't talk about the dress. So I thought, what about like sharing this experience with people, like all this, like it started with names, but you know, plants are talking about immigrant as well. Some plants immigrate, some plants are native. So we learn more, like we learn about people, but we forget the surrounding. We forget how life is full of other people. Like we always centered about ourselves as a human. We forget, you know, there are animals, what bird, like once, it's surprising to see this colorful bird and the sound and everything. Oh my God, how much beauty they bring to life. We forget that. So I thought to share part of it with the people, but don't forget, it started with names and the displacement and what kind, also again, like about people who came here. So I thought this beautiful, big, knowledge, I still need to learn more about plants and these beautiful, diverse stories, a lot of stories, we share them. And the best way to connect these people, and these people need to connect to land, to be settled, to feel the safety. It's not only the place, the community has a big part, but how about connecting to land and know this? So probably giving a name to a plant will be like this, will make this kind of feeling of safety, of settlement, of connection. So it was kind of making a meaningful gesture to connect with each other. In a way, I am always like a bad storyteller, but I love stories. I love to hear stories. So
you're a great storyteller, Khadija. I have to interrupt, I'm sorry, but you're a fantastic storyteller.
yeah, it's just I jump a lot from things because a lot of things, intense things come together. So I jump from here to there, then I find, oh, okay, then that thing is that. So, yeah, so... So from here, I wanted to do it. So then I wanted to do it at the time that was supposed to be in a public space, standing in a place that has a lot of people, anyone would pass by, or like creating this costume or this dress that is like even from made from natural material, which is grass, like dried grass, brafia. I wanted to create like kind of attractive points, so to be seen. I wanted to make a bold situation, put my body, carry these stories on my body. I thought they were hugging me instead of like being like carry heavy stories. It was the opposite. It was making me like, oh, connect is not only like my own story. It's our story, a collective of people who... why we need to be here, a settler or a guest for these people, not in a negative way. I always felt this guilt, oh my God, it's not my land. Do I take somebody's right or things? This kind of feeling, just to find peace with this idea also, like I'm not doing harm to people. I want to do good to this place, to these people. So I thought sharing other people's stories will kind of do things. You don't directly connect the goodness to the person, but you can connect to a community. But because of COVID, this other restriction come around borders, not only like border between country and travel, but the personal one, this kind of distance and this kind of the 2 meter policy, like this that keeps you safe, it's creating more negative connection with the social. I think we are restricted from social, and now like many people switch to virtual and realistic. It's kind of we are disconnect from the senses, and as a human we need to engage senses to have the feeling of a place and feeling of we exist. So without touching, without smelling, without seeing, without I see you and face to face and thing, I lose this sense of connection. When I see you, it's not like we connect. It's more than just like I sense and feel and smell. It's like this connection is more strong when there are senses involved. So I thought even the touching the plants or smelling it or having it physical thing can replace this kind of distance. So when you take the plant, even I cannot hug or give you my hand to shake hand or things. So there was distance. And I think the plant was doing the job, was giving something that I couldn't do because the safety thing. So then like, yeah, the restriction was there. So we were not allowed to do that in a public space. And I really want to do it. I strive to do it. So we were restricted to a smaller number. So I thought, okay, I don't have access to place, but anyway, the nature is there. I can have access to nature. So and what is best then? When I chose the Aboriginal spot, like what is better than going there and just go there and got the permission to be on that land and telling this story in a way like I wanted to say I am a guest and I am not here to harm, and these people's stories can be the witness and can be the evidence of people looking for safety, and we have similar kind of need for peace and certainty on this land. So I thought the best way is to start from that spot. So, and yeah, we had access for certain numbers, so we could go and do there, but I am striving to do it, especially could be on street, could be in a garden and in a park, public park. So anyone can come and talk like this sharing intimate moment. It's very important we learn about each other. What is better than stories to connect to each other and have a care taken home? Care offer to be taken home with that story. So I thought it will be a way to reflect on connection and the need for us as a human to connect to each other, and it's very important.
Future is now.
I think art should do more than just digital thing, you know, interest in technology, interest in different ways, because we have to undo the politic. We have to undo like the wrong thing that is enforced on everybody's life. Who else other than art who will do that? So just highlight every single possibility that is called art or creative, or so it's part of the process, like really like show the knowledge and the thing we do artistically without even knowing, like everybody does at certain moment an art in their life, like the way they cook, probably the way they plan, the way they arrange their home, the way they, you know, because art is looking for better, is more than just an object, more than just like making an object. It's a, it can be object that is a mark they want to leave behind, but it's not the goal. The goal is like to highlight the beauty and aesthetic of the changing a meaning of something, transforming like a person who is able to cross the sea, the ocean, to be here looking for a life. This is an art process because they are able to reimagine a new life. They are able to put this much effort to come here to look for a life. They abandon everything. And this is what artists do. Like they, you know, they take something and they make something meaningful out of it. And this person who crossed the ocean, they come to make a meaningful life for themselves, for their families and other people who leave behind. So it's just also another way also to say, like, you know, we are, life is very generous. We need to see this generosity and just think about other than ourselves, just as a center of which is really most of the time it's painful way to see, because you are deprived from everything. But when you see the surrounding, like this gratitude, this connection makes you like feel the feeling, like if you are a miserable person, like come on, see what is around you, you know.
I guess this pandemic made many of us, not everybody unfortunately, many of us to appreciate more what Mother Nature gave us and how generous the nature is towards human being. I remember at the beginning of pandemic, I couldn't see my grandchildren, and the streets were deserted. And I the first performance after this hard time I saw live was your performance. And it was so touching for me because you were in this native garden in Jardin Botanique, and you become part of that nature. You were not separate. I felt when you were standing there with your dress that you handmade, you were part of that nature. You connected to that nature and brought us this plant with names. Then it wasn't only a name. There was, each name had a story. And this story is how you connect with other people, how you give as a gift to other people. I brought my gift home, and I planted in our garden. And my granddaughter, she loves cherry tomatoes, and it was giving her cherry tomatoes. Your stories, I think about it for very, very long time, and how story, as you said, how stories are important, how we should know about each other's story, otherwise we don't know, we can't connect. Maybe in, as you, as a Kurdish experience, you're not allowed to use your name, and when we come here also, we just become only a simple name without any stories. And telling all these stories that you're sharing, people will realize all these people's sacrificing so much and putting themselves and their family in danger to come here. They have so much to tell and they have so much to offer.
Disembodied traces, threads cut bare. Is there hope without a home? Is there a body without bone? Mm-hmm. The mind's eye cradles choices. Voices tatter in secondhand stories as memories scatter like the changing of seasons.
Do you want to talk about a little bit about your another project that I guess I saw it in 2018 or 2019, multidisciplinary installation, Birds Crossing Borders. Can you tell me about that project? You are in a perfect sense, you are a multidisciplinary artist. You do so many things. And but in this Birds Crossing Borders installation, can you explain what was this project? How did you come up with that project?
Sometimes simple story can teach us a lot about each other. So in most of my work, there are stories. So either inspired by or they are into the work. And I don't believe like in work that I should represent somebody. Everybody like has a voice. They can, if they don't have a platform to do it, so then the art will be doing the job. So I just incorporate within the work. So I always try to figure out how should these stories come to life, or how should we reflect on stories and what it will do this time. Each time is one action. So each time is something in the focus. So this time was like, you remember in 2015 when this big, big, big mass immigrant or refugees were going from Middle Eastern, from war spot, hot spot to look for a place, for a safety. So people were going in mass number. It was a huge number, actually. So a lot of people in Europe were shocked, maybe afraid, or like there was kind of fear that was created even from media before reporting just war, the violence part of it. So there was some fears from this, but some countries, they opened the door, some other country, they closed the door, some were not sure what to do. A lot of people are stuck around border. Part of my family passed through this as well. So I know how difficult it was for these people spending 2 weeks in a forest or to cross, to walk with kids, with everything, old people, people who died as it was winter time, children died, got sick. So all this sacrifice, because they run away from violence, they run away from death, and they wanted safety, they wanted to secure their lives. So it reminded me of like birds, because birds, when they immigrate, when they travel, they are simply looking for life. They don't think, they just simply have this instinct. They didn't do it before, they haven't heard about it, but they do it. It's instinct. Even one bird or a group of birds, they have this kind of need to safety. So they go, the weather push them, simply because they will die if they stay. And when they go there, they come back. This kind of crossing borders is, I would say it, searching for life, like searching for or preserving their own lives. And, you know, like this kind, I was thinking about the physics, you know, the nature can show you something. Like when you have this two container, one is filled, one is empty, simply by connecting them, the liquid will flow and be equal in the same. It doesn't matter the shape, it doesn't matter the thing, but the nature will make them like filled equal to a certain level. So it was so much like telling me about, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what you carry, what is your like shape or your own culture, but there are certain thing in life that will give you equal chance, or maybe there is a need to have this equal chance to be balanced. And this is what we need in the society, like to have access to this balance, to feel the peace, or to have this peaceful without having conflict because of religion or value or things that is shaping our life, I would say. So we need to find a way that is still connecting us. You don't need to push. You can stimulate this to happen by doing other ways, like creating kind of environment or places where people really got engaged with each other, or, you know, it's about, again, about like having a new life for these people, and they don't feel strange, or they don't feel isolated, or they don't feel rejected. So I thought of creating this project. Actually, it came by itself. It was a way. So I had a few people who came and showing their process of the displacement. So how these people came here, their story, what they carry with, why they are here. And this big like panoramic thing, I was representing really big variety of people, like a person who really faced violence directly, a person who is like activist and privileged, who come with the language, but immediately working, an artist who was activist, and another person who is like normally a journalist who went back home just to live this moment of revolutionary moment, who was waiting for like all these decades. And you know, there were a lot of stories I collected, people who told us story about amazing people, Canadian people who really sponsored a strange family, like a stranger family who helped him to bring his family here. So like this generous, beautiful people who were here to share the stories with the public, with people, is just like they were carving to show themselves they are not here for harm. They are here like they are humans who brought their experience, who want to share their experience. They have knowledge, they have a lot of things to share, to offer this society, to build together. So this was like kind of showing the other way, like not only this like you, when you say Syrian, people don't know where it is, Syria on the map. Before the war, I used to tell them, because Iraq had war. So, you know, Iraq, most people would say, oh yeah, the place that has war. So we are beside Iraq. And now Syria has the war. So when we are from Syria, oh, the war country, they know it. And which is like, so like, It hurt, like, oh my God, the land, who thought that we will have this? It was a revolution, then it becomes war. Who would think about that? And why we identify a place by its war, by its violence? Why we don't identify it by life? Like, focus on a positive thing will bring the positivity, I think. So this place has violence. If we say it's a war place, then we accept the thing. But if we say this place has this many people, survivor and people who had a life, then we will reject the war thing. We will reject that thing. I don't want to see Syria a war country. I want to see it, the Syria, the place where it's full of life. And even here, like, I reject this idea of identifying place with violence. No, it has this experience. We need to know this violence. We are not closing our eyes from it, but it shouldn't be what it identify the place. It should be another way, another thing to talk about. And when we talk about this thing, we push people like, oh my God, how come this beautiful place, these beautiful people have to live this? Why this place has to survive this? Not only Syria, but it's an example. For me, it's the familiar place, but it's reflecting about other place. It could be about a country in Africa. It could be like Uganda, it could be Rwanda, it could be Yugoslavia, it could be other. So other people also has this, which country didn't pass certain kind of war. So it's, we share this much together. So what we need to learn from, to focus on the living thing, on the survivors, on not on on the victimhood that is submit to the power that control you, like accept the violence by the powerful people. No, we will not accept that. We will work against it. We'll bring life to the light. We put the spotlight on every single survivor and their way of resistance, their way of escaping this violence, their way of connecting to a new place. It doesn't matter where we are, because we connect with people, with nature, with a place, with food that goes through our bodies. And with this is what makes a person like, or a citizen, or, you know, this is what makes us.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of Future Is Now. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I'm looking forward to sharing more about Khadija's life and art with you in the second part of our conversation, coming soon in the next episode. For Future Is Now, I am Shahrzad Arshadi. Goodbye, and please don't forget to be kind.
You've been listening to Future Is Now, a podcast series exploring intersections between art and social change. Produced by Zed Gallery's Shahrzad Arshadi and Caroline Künzli. This project was made possible by funding from the Canada Council for the Arts.
Future is now.
I guess I saw it in 2018 or 2019, multidisciplinary installation, Birds Crossing Borders.
Good evening, it's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Dojage in the Ganiagaha language and Munuyeng in Anishinaabemowin, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah Day, live in studio on Thursday, September 14th, 2023. Kind of a great, cool day out, but I've got a lot of really interesting conversations to tell you about and things to do this weekend. Weather's going to be pretty cool, so I think it's going to be a good time to get out and to start seeing theater as we jump into a new season. My guests tonight include Miranda Rose Hall's play about climate change and anxiety was presented at the Centaur during the pandemic, and now it's coming back as Centaur continues to build ties with the French theater community. This production will be presented en français in a partnership with La Licorne Theatre. Director Rose Potek remains at the helm of the show, and she will join me first this hour. Then, an eccentric Colombian family serves as the real-life inspiration of Providencia, a play with a magical realism bent being presented at Théâtre aux Écuries in just a few days. It kicks off their season. We're going to meet the actress who plays the main character, who is a career woman on the verge of burnout. Her name is Adriana, and she's on her way to a funeral when Providencia gets its title from a volcano. So she gets there just as things erupt. Emmanuel Lucier Martinez will join me shortly. And six artists explore the idea of fantasy in Corps et Confetti in Cabaret de la Fratrie. This is opening tonight at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine. One of the artists who was given a lot of space to develop their identity and presentation will join me shortly before opening tonight. That will be Stacy Desilier, and we'll connect before 7. A lot of things to check out this weekend. Dizeo continues at the director's home near Frontenac Metro. You can see the greatest play in the history of the world at the Hudson Village Theater. It launched yesterday and is running for 2 weeks. Lena Cruz and Philip Navarro were our guests last week. They're presenting Tomato Blues. It's a mixed bill of music with dance and spoken word over at Mainline Theater, running through this weekend. You can follow Upstage for updates, images of our guests, and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. Some pretty cool photos up there right now. Stay tuned. When we come back, we will connect with director Rose Plotek behind the French adaptation of Miranda Hall's, Rose Hall's new play.
Vengan todos. Get set to meet the city's most eccentric Colombian family starting on September 19th. Discover Providencia, an extravagant and spicy comedy in which laughter, music, and the unexpected come together at an eventful family reunion. Presented at the Teatro Zicuri near the Fabre metro station. Information and tickets available online.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. It is almost 6:05, and we're off to the races to see our first interview of the evening. We're going to head over to Lalicorn Theater, which is located on Papineau, I believe just above Mount Royal, if I'm remembering correctly. And we're going to reconnect with director Rose Plotek, who was a frequent guest on the show during the pandemic, working on lots of different projects. And Rose is once again at the helm of a presentation by a play from an American writer named Miranda Rose Hall, who was a guest actually on Upstage during the pandemic when her show was presented at by Centaur Theater. And it is a really interesting one-person show, so perfect for a pandemic reality. And it explores climate anxiety, but it's also a fun kind of science-y play. And it was gorgeously done. Now in a partnership with Lalicorn Theater, they actually turned to Centaur, invited them to come put the show on in French. So A Play for the Living in a Time of Extinction is now Une Pièce pour les Vivants en Temps d'Extinction. It's a fresh translation by Sarah Jane Maloney. And Rose joins us on the line from Lalicorn. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Welcome back to Upstage. So when you found out that this production was going to be happening, were you kind of wondering, are they going to ask me to do this again? Did you have a say kind of in the development of booking the show?
Well, I had invited Philippe Lambert, who's the artistic director here at Lalicorn, to come and see the show. I've known Philippe, you know, from around the city, and I've done a reading here at Lalicorn previously. So I knew that there was a French translation that had already been done of the play. And I thought it would be great to be able to bring the production to the French community. So I was kind of already eager to have that happen. And so it was just wonderful that when Philippe saw the English production, he invited us to bring it here in this translation.
That's very exciting. And you get to direct it again, which must feel like a pretty big honor.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, the entire team from the original Centaur production is back on this show for the design team. And we've got an amazing Francophone actor joining us for this production.
Yeah, I want to get to the performer in just a moment.
Yeah.
But let's set the scene first of what the show is. You know, I'm always kind of wary about shows that tackle big things like climate change anxiety, because you always wonder, okay, so how do we take something that's a bit intangible and make it tangible in the confined space of a theater? It takes a lot of imagination. And I was so delighted within the first few minutes to realize that I really related to the character. And it's because you don't automatically start with "The world is on fire." We meet a theater maker who's feeling really overburdened because they've had to step in at the last minute and kind of cover. So for anybody who's ever been at work and has been told, "Look, so and so is calling in sick, and you're gonna have to pull in an extra shift or a longer day or whatnot," you relate to that. So that's our starting point. Tell me about the character we meet, Naomi, and what she's going through.
Yeah, so Naomi is a dramaturg, which is a very particular job in the theater. It is a role that contributes research and kind of creative ideas to a production. And so Naomi, as you said, is kind of thrust suddenly into the role of having to tell this story to her audience. And she is not a performer. And so she decides to take a slightly different approach than just simply performing the show that was originally conceived. And she decides to share with the audience some of the things that have been preoccupying her around her own fears, concerns, preoccupations around the climate emergency. So one of the things that makes the play so beautiful is how human it is. It's very accessible, as you said. The character and the things that are preoccupying her just feel so recognizable. And I think when I first read the script, that was the thing that struck me, was just how much I felt like the voice of this character spoke to my own preoccupations and those of my peers and people around me. So it's not a kind of, the piece is not like a kind of activist coming on stage to really kind of get in your face about the circumstances. It's really a person who's kind of just living their life and really preoccupied with the circumstances in which we find ourselves.
Yeah, Naomi's very relatable because she's just coming kind of at it as a very normal person.
Yes, exactly.
Speaking with Rose Plotek, who is returning as director to A Play for the Living in a Time of Extinction. It is being translated into French, and it is now known as Une pièce pour les vivants en temps d'extinction. It's over at La Licorne, it's a Centaur Theatre production, co-presented with La Manufacture. So many names and titles to get through. It's so great when you have all these groups coming together, but it's unwieldy. And I was actually wondering, how do you say the title of the play for short? Because it's a lot of words.
We just tend to say une pièce pour les vivants, a play for the living, just to kind of keep it amongst ourselves.
I would just call it a play. Got it down to the first two words. All right. So you mentioned the fabulous actress who's taking over the role of Naomi. I was really happy to see, because the original role at Centaur was played by Warona Setsuelo, who's one of our finest performers, also a Black performer. And you have found another Black actress to take over the role, Fabiola Nirva Aladdin, who has worked in theater and on TV as well, and is also an improviser, as I understand it. So tell me about what
That's
Fabiola
right.
brings to the role.
Fabiola, well, as you said, Warona is such an incredible, such a joy to watch. And unfortunately, her French is not quite at the level that we needed to be able to join us for this production. And so we have the real privilege to have Fabiola joining us for this production. And as you said, her background is varied. So she comes from the world of improv. She's done film, she's done TV, she's done theater. She's also an educator. So she brings a real particular capacity to relate to an audience. And the piece involves a significant amount of dialogue with the audience quite directly. And so her background as an improviser is just so perfectly suited to being ready to roll with whatever any audience can kind of throw at her. And she is just such a delight to spend, you know, a bit over an hour of time with. So I think audiences are really in for a treat if they don't know this incredible actor already.
And you can see what Fabiola looks like in a promotional photo at Upstage CKUT on Instagram. If you want to take a look at that, it is up now. So Fabiola, for you as a director, working with one actor who's on stage, as you mentioned, the show's pretty brief and runs over just an hour. What kind of guidelines, directions do you give as a director when you're focused on that one performer?
Well, I actually have had, thinking back on it, quite a few experiences of directing solo pieces. So I sort of feel quite comfortable in this very intimate relationship that you have when you're directing a solo. It's really so often just the performer, yourself, and the stage manager for kind of weeks on end in dialogue. And so it's so much a dialogue because it relies on myself as the director being the audience for the performer, because the audience in this context is the scene partner. So it's really just such a pleasure to be able to kind of play with her throughout the rehearsal process. And now just gradually we're starting to integrate having like little groups of people come in to join us in the rehearsal hall as we're moving towards our opening next week.
Now, you directed Warona back in May 2022, and now it is September 2023. Curious to know, for you as an artist, as a director, has your mindset changed at all in directing Warona and now Fabiola? Has your approach changed?
They're both such exquisite performers, and they are very much their own person, and so it's just kind of getting to know each of them as individuals and having them interpret the character just slightly differently. You know, each of them brings a different lived experience. And also the language, of course, in and of itself changes the approach to the play. And so we've had a great pleasure in the translation was originally done for a Swiss audience. And so we've made some adjustments to bring it to